This is Golf with Jay Delsing. A two-time college All-American at UCLA. A participant in nearly 700 PGA Tour events. 7 professional wins to his credit. Over 30 years of professional golf experience. A member of the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame. This is Golf with Jay Delsing.
Hey, good morning. Golf with Jay Delsing here. I am your host, Jay. Earl, what's going on this morning?
Just ready to go, Jay. Excited about this show. You've got another superstar, almost maybe one of the all-time greats, definitely one of the all-time greats, and looking forward to talking about him, Tom Watson.
Well, first of all, we got to give you a couple creds here. All-American at UCLA, caddied over 100 PGA Tour events. Who can say that in their life? Successful businessman, got several dollar bills in your pocket. Lover of the game, author. What else have you done, Pearl? You are a hell of a fisherman, I will say that. There's only been a couple of times where I feel like I've ever outfished you. Not that I'm competitive or keeping track at all.
What makes you upset about that?
You can obviously tell I'm not over it, am I?
Apparently not. Hey, I absolutely love to fish. And as you know, there's a lot of golfers that like to fish. I'm not sure what, maybe it's just the patience thing. Golf needs it and fishing needs it, or a competitive thing or being outdoors thing or all of the above thing. But there's plenty of us golfers that like to do a little fishing.
We formatted the show like a round of golf. The first segment is called the On the Range segment, and it's brought to you by TaylorMade Golf. Guys, you got to check out the Stealth Driver. I've been hawking that for a couple months now. You've got to check out the Stealth Fairway Woods are awesome. I'm actually going to start messing around with a little 3-wood, which I never thought that was possible because I love, love, love my old faithful 3-wood. We appreciate Jeff Thornhill. We appreciate TaylorMade Golf. The next level of TaylorMade for you is try the golf ball. Send me an email, jay@jaydelsinggolf.com. We will send you, your name is drawn, we will send you a dozen TP5 golf balls for free. I want to thank Bob and Kathy Donahue at Donahue Painting and Refinishing, 314-805-2132. If you need help on the inside of your home, the outside of your home, anywhere, these folks, they're terrific. Give them a call. First of all, you'll love them as people. Second of all, you won't believe the work they do. 314-805-2132. All right, Pearly, Tom Watson. Wow.
Well, just fantastic. Another superstar, somebody that we looked up to forever. Hey, I just want to throw one piece out there. I can remember caddying for you in, I believe it was Grand Lake, Michigan, Warwick Hills. He was playing as well. It was one of the first times I ever caddied for you. And we crossed paths with him. He had actually hit it into your fairway or almost to your fairway, kind of the rough where he had to hit the next one through the trees. He tried to hit the next one, it hit another tree. And then I kind of kept an eye on him. He hit another tree after that. And I can remember thinking to myself, I thought he never hit a bad shot. It was my first understanding that all of you guys are human, but some of you guys are just able to hold it together and be able to pull it out a little bit more often, but all you guys miss. But that was my first interaction with Tom Watson.
I can remember getting to play. There was a time in the late 80s where I sought out all the best players in the world and wanted to play with them. I played with Norman. I played with Watson. I played with all these guys that were leading the money list in practice rounds so that when I got to play with them in the competition, I wouldn't be so... I didn't want to be in awe of them, you know, because Pearl, it was really weird when you're suddenly teeing it up with, say, one of your boyhood idols. I can remember the first time I played with Ben Crenshaw. I was like, damn, man, you got to be kidding me. I'm playing with Gentle Ben and I watch him roll the putter and things like that. And then playing with Greg Norman, the way he drove the ball, it can completely whack you out of your comfort zone.
Tell us about asking those guys to be able to play with them, because they had groups they wanted to play with. They're trying to play with somebody better than them. How did you go about asking some of that to get in the mix to play some of the practice rounds with those different guys?
Are you trying to insinuate that I wasn't better than them?
I was trying to speak quickly around that so that you wouldn't point that out, but you didn't let me do it. So, but how did that go? And did anybody ever big time you and not accept your invitation or turn you down at some time?
Well, for the most part, I went, you know, through friends and stuff like that. So we set up a game. I'll tell you a quick story about Greg Norman round of golf at the Players Championship. I forget what year it was, in the early 90s. It was Steve Pate, myself, Brad Faxon, and the Shark. And Shark was world number one at the time. We throw up balls, and I think it's Faxon and I against Pate and Shark. And we're playing $100 no bogey. So whoever makes
no bogey. Pater's top dog in the world at that time too. So you and Fax have your hands full on that match.
Yeah, I was the redheaded stepchild of the group, no question about it. We got the best putter maybe of all time. We got world number one, and we got the volcano. I didn't even have a nickname. I took care of my no bogey on like the third hole, made a bogey, and people started dropping off. But I can tell you, Fax and I put it to them. Long story short, after the front nine, we are two units up and Shark quits.
Oh, boy.
And do you think he paid?
I'm going to guess. Let me think. No.
He's like crime. He's just like crime. He doesn't pay. And so I'm like, that sucks. And I had another few things that I think I might have said to Pater, who was laughing because you knew he wasn't going to pay.
Oh, my gosh. That's brutal.
Yep.
I didn't think that happened out there. I didn't think that was allowed to happen.
I think Fax and I might have shamed Pater into a few dollars, and nobody ever got any money out of Norman for sure. But I got to play with Tom Watson. The group that we had was Tom Watson, Lanny Watkins, Bobby Watkins, and myself. And where did we play, Pearl? Riviera. What a day that was. I'll never forget. I was so fired up. Bobby Watkins and I played the two Hall of Famers.
And?
We won.
Wow, awesome.
We won about 80 awesome. Bucks. We won about 80 bucks. And yes, they did pay. Pearl, I was firing. I was in a very confident mode at that time. And I was, and I knew Riviera well from our college days. So it was a fun.
What a great place. What a great place that is. What a great memory for you to look back on that type of a match. Because Bobby Watkins, that was a character. There's a journeyman character. Different game right there for sure.
Actually, Pearl, I'm wrong. It was Lanny and I versus Bobby and Tom. Pearl, this is when I just finished. I think I finished 15th on tour the year before in putting and like 30th. And I was extremely confident with my putts and I was hitting a lot of putts firm. So I had a lot of 4, 3, 4, and 5 footers out there. And Lanny was like, dude, what are you doing? And I just end up there and knock him in. He's like, oh, okay, that's what you're doing. I can remember coming down 18. We had a couple presses going on, and I made a nice little 12-footer. You know, that 18th hole at Riviera is not easy. We plotted down there so many times at UCLA, most of those breaks. So, yeah, it was really a fun memory.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome.
All right, so, John, before we get into the Tom Watson, let's talk a little bit about our golf games. Your game for the people. Will use you as an example, and let's start on the putting green. How are you putting?
I'm putting pretty. Actually, I'm always starting on the putting green. As I told you, when I was in Arizona, I was in Florida, I was putting a lot, practicing a lot. I was getting quite diligent about it, and it's absolutely paying off. For the first time in years, I'm actually seeing and sensing my line quite well. Some of the drills that you've given me, having the line around the equator of the golf ball so that I can see if my roll's true. I do a drill with a yardstick to understand my path, the squareness of my blade. So I've been very diligent, and I'll be honest with you. I might have too big of hopes on how I putt this year because I think I'm off to a fantastic start.
But you are. And folks, so here's what we want you to do on the putting green. Start with the clock drill. Start at 2 feet, 3 or 4. Let's just go 3 balls. 3 balls around the hole. So you're going to have each one of these 2 feet away from the hole. You're going to probably have a little one that's a little left to right, one that's a little right to left, and one that'll be straight. Knock those 3 in. If you miss, you have to start over. That's the key about this drill, and I'll tell you why that's important. Then after you knock those first 3 2-footers in, go to 3 feet and knock those in. And then once you do that, you're going to wrap it up with 4-footers. And it gets dicey. It gets dicey. But the most crucial part of this drill is your focus. And you're going to stand over that last 4-footer knowing that if I knock this in, I get to go do something else. And you're going to put pressure on yourself. And your focus is going to be there. And you're going to need to figure out how to get yourself in the state of mind to knock that putt in. That's a big, big deal. The other thing that's really cool that I told Pearly to do is put a stripe around the equator of your ball. If you're playing a Titleist, if you're playing a TaylorMade, a TP5, you could take a little black or a colored Sharpie and just put a line over that stamp. All right. And then get off to the side of the green, line that thing up so that it's straight up and down on the ground. and then put your blade behind it and putt. Do not putt to a hole. Just putt. Just roll. Just roll this ball and let's see how well that ball stripes. We want that ball rolling end over end, and it will give you confidence to know that you're striking that ball correctly.
Hey, Jay, that stripe around the equator is one of the aiming aids, if you will. But what do you think about the yardstick or some other aiming aids, about your shoulders, your hips, your feet being squared up, the blade being squared up, understanding, being able to see what path you need to be swinging that putter head on? Do you have any advice for just kind of the basic alignment issues for early in the year?
Yeah, if you have a, you could even use the shaft of a golf club because it's pretty, it's going to be very straight to kind of help you with your path. You can also, one of my favorite training aids is the putting arc, and it's ARC, and it is really a great little device because you can either use the toe or the heel of your putter, and it'll track you and help you take your stroke ever so slightly on the inside, but without too much face rotation. Folks, that's where people's trains fall off the track with their putting. They get that face rotating open and closed way too much. So we're going to keep it really, really square and on this arc, on path, square to your path, which is going to be ever so slightly inside, not very much off that line. That's what I would do. I would go next gen. Then we want to go from 50 yards out. We want to go just off the green, hit some chips, and I'm going to call a chip about a 5-yard area, maybe 15 feet off the green with no rough. So we're going to take, you know, maybe an 8-iron, maybe a 9-iron, maybe a pitching wedge. Actually, you can take whatever club you're most confident with and basically use that same stroke, get the ball position correct. We want your hands on the front edge of the ball and want the ball towards the middle of your stance. Really, really basic. Guys, here's the other thing. And John, you just mentioned it with your putting, but throughout your bag, we want your feet, your knees, your hips, and your shoulders and forearms stacked on top of each other. I'll mention the forearms separately, but we want hip, feet down first, knees straight above, hips on top of that, and your shoulders in a line so that you are stacked. And for the most part, folks, right-handed players address the golf ball with their shoulders too open or pointing to the left, don't they, John?
Yes, they absolutely do. A big problem.
It's one of those things. It's hard to give people absolutes when you're teaching golf, especially not seeing them. But John, that is a universal problem. I would say 9 out of 10 golfers that are right-handed have.
Well, the chipping's so important. Last week, we heard from Ted Scott talking about Scottie Scheffler and the immense amount of time and effort it takes to do his pitching and chipping. And that's what you're discussing now. And then we're going to get to listen to an interview with Tom Watson, one of the all-time great pitchers and chippers. And again, they spent a boatload of time doing it. Just super important.
I am going to leave it with chipping and putting today. And then we are going to catch up next week on pitching the golf ball and hitting some fuller shots and the driver. All right. Because we can't gloss over those. If we have enough time later in the show, we'll cover it. But right now, we're just going to leave that for next week. Pearl, we got to do the tip of the cap segment. Have you got any ideas on who we're tipping our cap to this week?
Let's tip our cap to the sport of baseball that's also getting going in the spring and making spring sports, spring in general, ushering in the spring golf altogether. Sports are alive and well, and it's a great time of year.
Baseball's the first love of my life. I absolutely love it. The tip of the cap is brought to you by the Dean Team Volkswagen of Kirkwood and my friend Colin Burt. 314-966-0303. You can also see Brandy over there. You can see Bill Van Owen. He's another great guy, part of that team over there. If you need anything, jay@jdelsongolf.com. Email me. I will personally introduce you to those guys. Baseball, the crack of the bat, America's pastime. We're able to watch the games in person. It's a great time of year. Lots of baseball to watch this year. And I want to thank Dean Team Volkswagen of Kirkwood, 314-966-0303. And Colin, thanks for supporting the show. Pearl, we are going to be right back with our interview with the great Tom Watson. This is Golf with Jay Delson.
On the Range with Jay Delsing is brought to you by TaylorMade. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. The Front Nine is coming up.
I want to tell you about my friends and longtime supporters of this show, Marcone. Yes, they are incredible community stewards. Yes, they are the largest distributors of GE appliance parts in North America. What you don't know, they are spearheading, led by owner Ann St. Louis and Jim Sowers, a new service dog program with and in conjunction with David Faraday and the 24/7 Battle Buddy program. Jim and Marcone are ensuring that a minimum of two service dogs a year will get partnered with a veteran hero in need. These dogs are expertly trained, connected with their veteran master, and then magic starts to happen. These dogs are retrained to meet the specific needs of their warrior and to help them successfully navigate everyday life. You can learn more on Facebook at Troops First 24/7 Battle Buddies or reach out to me at jay@jaydelsinggolf.com and I will fill you in on more of this program. How would you like access to 90 holes of golf? Well, that's what happens when you join at Whitmore Country Club. You get access to the Missouri Bluffs, the Links of Dardenne, and the Golf Club of Wentzville. And guess what? No cart fees included in that deal. There's no food and beverage minimums. There's no assessments. They have a 24-hour fitness center, two large pool complexes, three tennis courts. Year-round social calendar includes holiday parties, picnics, date nights, live music. They even have a kids club for your children and much, much more. There's junior golf, junior tennis, and swim teams available. This is a family-friendly atmosphere, and they have a wonderful staff. If you get out there, you got to poke your head in the golf shop and say hello to my friend Bummer. He is a terrific guy, and he will help you with your game and show you around. And don't forget, there are golf leagues, skins games, members tournaments, and couples events available all year round. Visit WhitmoreGolf.com. That's WhitmoreGolf.com.
You're listening to Golf with Jay Delsing. For golf tips, news on the latest equipment, and everything golf, log on to golfwithjaydelsing.com. The Front Nine is coming up.
Hey, this is Jay Delsing for SSM Health Physical Therapy. Our golf program has the same screening techniques and technology as the pros on the PGA Tour use. SSM Health Physical Therapy has the Titleist Performance Institute trained physical therapist that can perform the TPI screening on you, as well as use a K-Vest 3D motion capture system. Proper posture, alignment, etc. can help you keep your game right down the middle. We have 80 locations in the St. Louis area. Call 800-518-1626 or visit them on the web at ssmphysicaltherapy.com. Your therapy, our passion.
This is Golf with Jay Delsing. The Front Nine is presented by the Ascension Charity Classic, September 5th through the 11th at Norwood Hills Country Club. For tickets, ascensioncharityclassic.com.
Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm your host, Jay. I got Pearlie with me. We are jumping on to the Front Nine, and it's brought to you by the Ascension Charity Classic, September 6th through 11th, Norwood Hills. Don't forget about the Advocate PGA Tour event at Glen Echo that same week. Lots of great golf up in North County. Guys, we're going to my interview with the great Tom Watson. 77 worldwide wins, 8 major championships, 39 PGA Tour wins. Enjoy this interview. Tom Watson. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Jay.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Tom. Gosh, one of the thrills of doing this show, I've had the privilege of interviewing a couple Hall of Famers like yourself and looking over your career, Tom. 78 worldwide wins, 8 major championships, 39 PGA Tour wins, Hall of Fame member, 6-time player of the year. I could go on and on and on. What a phenomenal career you've had.
Well, I'm playing a game for a living. Yeah, you know what it's like. I played golf with you on the tour. And we were out there just trying to, we're just trying to be the best we could be out there.
It was really fun, Tom, for me, especially I can remember the first time I got to play with you. We were playing in a practice round at Riviera with Lanny and Bobby Watkins. And I just couldn't stop looking at you all day, watching your swing, watching your putting stroke, because I got to grow up, you know, watching you win the Masters, watching you with the duel in the sun, and then getting to walk down the fairways was a hell of a thrill for me.
There was a lot of water under the bridge, when you play the PGA Tour with lots of different players and personalities. When I first started out there, you know, the players that I came out to try to emulate were Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer, Lee Trevino, Johnny Miller. Those are the players that, Sam Snead, actually, you know, the Slam and Sam was still playing the tour, Jay, when I started in 1971. And I had a chance to play with Sam a few times. I remember one day we were paired in the last round at the LA Open Riviera, and we came to the fourth hole there, and I hit a four wood. I cut a four wood into that right to left green, and I made a hole in one. And old Sam said, "Nice shot, son." But I remember why it was so neat, because it was on the fourth hole. It was in the fourth round. I was playing with a McGregor four to go four under. So it's all fours on that particular hole. The stars were aligned.
Tom, I've played that hole probably 300 times, and I don't know if I've hit the green, you know, half a dozen. That is one hell of a tough hole.
It is. Well, I always tried to play a cut shot into that green, because if you hit a hook and hit that right to left green, it would go right on over.
Every single time. Yeah, it really did. I struggled with that Kikuyu grass too, being a Midwestern guy. But Tom, so talk a little bit about growing up in Kansas City and how the game, one of the things that I've loved to talk to you great champions about is, do you remember back when the game bit you? And I know the way you are, and you're super competitive and kept in good shape, and I know you're still, it still has a hold of you to some degree now.
Well, I started, my dad started me in the game, Jay, like most players on the tour. My dad, who was a very good amateur player, started me and taught me the fundamentals of the grip and stance. And keeping my head still when I swung the golf club, and then finishing with my belly button facing the hole. That was the key, because that got your hips turning through the impact, it speeded up your arms, and it gave you an essence of acceleration and power. So that was the first lesson. But then we started playing golf out there, and we played winter rules in the fairway. So if you hit the ball in the fairway and the fairways weren't very good, and you could move it to a good lie. In the rough, you played it down. But, remember, we played winter rules. And then when the fairways got better, we just played some rules. You played down all the time. I think that's a healthy way to start young people. You don't force them to play the ball down all the time. Heck, you even put it on tees for players that are just starting. And I think that was, part of me enjoying the game. Yeah, of course, I enjoyed the game because I was playing with my dad, but I also had some other kids I was playing with. But the most important thing is my older brother, Rich. He was 3 years older than I was. And you know how brothers are, just slightly competitive. And 3 years older, 3 years stronger. I always wanted to beat my older brother. And that was always when I went out there. It was always to try to beat my older brother. And in a few years, I did it, but that inspired me. You play with players better than yourself, and you'll learn to be a better player. Promise you.
You won four state amateur titles in the state of Missouri. Then you went and got a scholarship to Stanford. Tell us a little bit about.
No, I didn't get a scholarship. I did not get a scholarship to Stanford. Wow. Golf helped me get in. It was one of the reasons I got in, but they didn't have much money.
I was going to say, they must not have had them back then if you didn't get one.
You know how much money they had in the golf budget back then, Jay? $8,000 was the total budget they had for the entire men's golf team. They didn't even have a woman's golf team.
Wow, how things have changed.
That was 1967, 68.
Man, I can't believe if someone like you didn't get a scholarship, they just didn't have scholarships, man. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But did you play a lot of table tennis as well?
No, that got on my resume, I guess, when I first came on the tour, and they said, "What are your hobbies?" Well, I just kind of got out of college. I played some table tennis and ping pong, but I'm not any good at it. Uh-huh. And it's always stuck there, and I get that question all the time.
I'm sorry that I brought that up.
No, the kids can beat my butt in ping pong, I promise you.
Oh, man, those guys are
so. I did play a lot of pool. I love to play pool and billiards. Three cushion billiards is the game I played around town here. That was fun.
Tom, you're a competitive guy. You're going to get into anything that somebody challenges you to, aren't you?
And just like any kid, we like to play games. And as I said, I've said many times, man, how lucky have I been in my life to be able to play a game for a living. It's not going to work. It's going out to the golf course. That's not work. I mean, that's just, that's a game. And it's a pleasure. Now, sometimes when you're not playing very well and you're hacking it around and you're trying to get better, and it's a frustrating game. You know, the frustration, and we all know the frustration that, the game is tough on us, but it's not work, because you're always trying to improve. You know, sometimes you just fail. You fail sometimes for a long period of time, like I did in the late 80s and early 90s, until I found a secret to my golf swing, and then everything flowed from there. It was wonderful.
Tom, before we talk about that, 1973, you met Bruce Edwards at Norwood Hills. Bruce was one of the greatest, nicest, cordial guys I'd ever met when I got on tour. Always treated me well.
Well, Bruce was... he was liked by everybody. He was he was a wonderful guy. He had a great sense of humor, and he loved the caddy. He had a passion for caddy, and he did it the right way. And he helped other young caddies who came on the tour. He'd take them under his wing and say, "All right, here are the ropes. Here's what is expected of you out here." And he did that with a number of caddies when they came on the tour.
Yeah, and I know how involved you are in the ALS and raising money. We did a little thing together not too long ago here in St. Louis that raised some real valuable money for that tough disease.
Yeah, that ALS, or is commonly known, the Lou Gehrig's disease, is a muscle wasting disease. It's a neuron disease that your neurons start to die, and then your muscles die, and then you basically, die of attrition. And there's no known cure, and there's no known substance that will even slow it down. That's the problem. We continue to raise funds for research, and that's all we can do. I'm a little bit frustrated right now and impatient with the fact that they haven't found anything in the nearly 17 or 18 years when I've been actively involved with ALS. I told Bruce when he died, before he died, 3 weeks before he died, I said, "Bruce, I will give my life to try to find a cure for ALS." And I continue to do that.
Tom, talk a little bit about your relationship with Byron Nelson. I know that coming off the U.S. Open in 74 at Wingfoot, and what a tough test that is. Tell us a little bit about how the influence and how Byron helped you, and what a tremendous ambassador for the game of golf Mr. Nelson was too. Holy smokes.
Byron goes back a long way. My dad, who was he was a golf historian, his favorite golfer on the tour was Sam Snead. He loved Sam's swing, his power, his rhythm over Hogan and over Nelson. He always said Nelson had that dip in his swing. Well, little did dad know that dip in his swing kept the club head square through impact longer than either Snead or Hogan did. And Byron hit the ball straighter than anybody. But, be that as it may, I got to know Byron by, first of all, he was on TV as a commentator, an analyst. When I got on the tour, I remember him coming out at Doral. He was doing the commentary at Doral during the Pro-Am. He walked out there and he was walking the 17th hole. That was my second year on tour or something like that. And he came up and walked up to me and said, "Tom, I'd like to meet you." And I said, "Well, Byron, it's my honor to meet you." And we hit it off right off the bat. And then in 74, as you related to, I shot 79, the final round of our national open at Wingfoot. And you're right about the golf course. I still think it's day in and day out the toughest test of golf in the country. But there may be other courses that are tougher, but boy, it's a tough golf course. But he came in after I shot 79 to the locker room. I was up after I finished commiserating with John Mahaffey, and they came into the upper locker room up there, and they had swinging doors, and he just looked over the swinging doors and said, "Tom, could I speak with you for just 5 minutes?" And the place went silent, and I said, "Sure." And so we went back in the corner of the locker room, and he just wanted to say that he was impressed about the way, not only how I played, but how I conducted myself, and that it, if any time in the future, I would like to work with him on my golf swing, he'd be open to that, to come down to Roanoke, Texas, to his Fairways Ranch, and I could stay there, and we could work on the game and just be together. Took me a couple of years to take him up on the offer, and in the fall of 76, I went down there and got a chance to work with him in my golf swing, and from then on it just blossomed. Our relationship blossomed. His wife Louise had a terrible stroke. Byron did not leave her side for 2 years, and I went down countless times just to be with him as he was living in the house there with Louise, and he was a great friend, a mentor, and a great storyteller. You know what I love most about Byron was his genuineness, his passion for the game, his passion for life, his passion for his religion. He had great passion for all, and little did people know he was a real hand. He loved to show off his golf skills, and even as an older age, every now and then we'd be doing an exhibition, and he'd be over there and say at the Byron Nelson Golf Classic at Preston Trail. And I was doing an exhibition for these kids, and Byron's standing there, and I said, "Kids, I want you to meet one of the greatest players of all time right here, the namesake of the tournament, Mr. Byron Nelson." And I said, "Byron, come on out here. You're going to hit drivers off the deck here." And so I didn't say driver off the deck, I said drivers off the deck. And I said, "Kids, watch this." And I don't think it impressed the kids much, but the parents around there, it impressed. So I said, "All right, Byron, I want you to do three things. Three balls. I want you to cut one, I want you to hook one, and I want you to hit one dead straight with the driver off the deck, no tee." And he did it perfectly, all three of them. He just loved it. He'd get that grin on his face after he did that. It was just wonderful. And he loved to ham it up and do that. I was around him a bunch, working with my golf swing with him, and he'd hit balls, and I was always in amazement how straight and through impact, how solid he hit the ball. I just couldn't carry his shoes, not even close.
Oh my gosh, Tom, when I think about hitting those old wooden drivers with a sweet spot the size of an eraser head off the deck, I mean, come on.
Well, he was probably the best long iron player in the game. He just hit it so solid and so straight. He didn't take the deep divots like Hogan did or Sam or Snead did. He hit those dollar bill divots, just real skinny, square divots. And it was just wonderful. He did it all the way through from the chipping all the way through the driver. It was wonderful to watch.
I remember getting to talk to the great Jack Nicklaus. Jack said about you, you were the best bad weather player he'd ever met. And then I also wanted to ask you, Tom, a little bit about Lynx golf. You're regarded as one of the top Lynx players of all time. 5 Open championships, 3 on the senior circuit. Talk to us a little bit about the bad weather and a little bit about Lynx golf. I know how dear it is to your heart.
Bad weather player is pretty simple for me. I practiced in it here in Kansas City off season. I mean, in Kansas City and in St. Louis, I mean, it gets we get snow, we get frozen greens, we get frozen temperatures. And if you're going to practice, you got to do it. Snow was an issue, although I did practice in the snow, lost half my golf ball. but it was something. We had a bunch of crazy idiots here at the club that I played golf, and they would play in any weather. We'd get up and we'd play a game called birdie bogey, which was a Stableford type of game. And even if it was a terrible weather, we'd have at least 2 groups out there playing in this game. And Stan Thirsk, who was the pro at the Kansas City Country Club, Stan always played. He was just one of the finest gentlemen and one of the great players, unsung great players that I've ever met in my life. And we'd go out and play in the cold weather. And, I was a hunter, and I still am. In fact, I was turkey hunting this morning. It wasn't very cold, but the weather, you learn to dress for it. You learn to dress for the cold weather. And a lot of the kids in California and Florida, they didn't really like cold weather very much. It shortened up their swings, made them go faster. Heck, I practiced in it and played in it all the time. But then going on to links golf, I think I get that question a lot, Jay, about why was I so successful at links golf? Well, yeah, I actually got lucky to win two of my open championships. But one of the things that I did very well, and you saw it with Seve, and you see it with you saw it with Scottie Scheffler in the final round of the Masters this year, is my up and down skills. I was a great putter, but I also could, I could get the ball up and down out of the bunkers, chipping the ball. And when you play links golf courses, as you well know, you're going to miss more greens there because the greens are so hard and firm and the ball bounces so much. You're going to miss the greens, and you better be able to get the ball up and down. And that was right in my wheelhouse, my forte.
Tom, I can remember your close friend and my dear friend, Andy North, taking me kind of under his wing when I first got on tour because we were kind of built the same way.
Yeah,
and
he
would always tell me about, you got to go play with Tom. You won't believe how good he is around the greens with the wedges. And he used to teach me and show me stuff. And he always talked about your ability. You were so underrated with that wedge. Everybody knew what a great putter you were, but you got the ball. He said you could get the ball up and down from a trash can, and half the time you never had to take the lid off of it.
Well, I practiced, when I was a kid, I practiced around the greens all the time. And I make this suggestion to people who ask me, what should I, how much do you practice your short game and long game? I practice my short game more than my long game. As a kid, you get direct results from your short game. When you're a kid, you don't hit it very far, practicing hitting a driver or an iron, it doesn't get it. But hitting the ball from around the green and getting the ball close, you can do that as a kid. You don't have to have strength. You just have to have technique and touch and feel. And I did that all the time. There was a practice green around the club there that it was elevated. It had a deep pit to the right, and it had a couple bunkers in it and a couple flags in it. And I practiced on that all the time. The other thing I did, though, honestly, was even before I started doing that, was I went to the putting clock, and I putted around the putting clock all the time. And that was it was easy for a kid to do. You don't have to, you didn't have to have your own balls. You go out and hit balls and in fact, I didn't have any balls. Dad had it. He had a practice bag that he would use, but he wouldn't let me use those. So I practiced around the greens. I practiced on the putting clock. I played games on the putting clock. We had 9 holes in the putting clock. I'd take 3 balls, and I'd go around from 9 to 1, and then go 1 all the way to 9, and with 3 balls. And I got good enough where my goal was to put around that clock with 3 balls, being 9 under par, meaning I had to make 9 aces out of 27 attempts on that putting clock. Then when I did that, I would reverse it, because then you reverse the breaks, and I'd do that. And it gets back to the essence of learning how to play the game, or playing the game of golf, is you play from the hole back. Your putting is first and foremost. You've got to learn how to putt and have the feel for distance and the understanding of break, slope. I remember the lesson that Harvey Pinnick gave Ben Crenshaw. His dad took him out for his first lesson. I don't know what age Ben was, but Mr. Pinnick said, "Ben, I want you to take that 7-iron and your putter. I want you to go over that green over there, and I want you to take 1 ball, and I want you to chip that ball to a hole in the green and then go putt it in." He did that for 2 months before the next lesson from Mr. Pinnick. Ben said, what he was doing? Very simply, he was teaching him how to play golf. What the essence of the game was is it's the hole. your essence is to get as close to the hole or in the hole as possible with every stroke in the bag. But you start short. You start short with kids, and you get them on, you get them around the greens, and that's how I did. Plus, I was somewhat competitive when we had a junior program there, and I had a bunch of older guys, 5 years old or 6 years, and they get on the putting green and they putt for dimes. Well, they asked me, "Do you want to putt for dimes in there?" I said, "Yeah, let me go." See, I didn't have but 30 cents in my pocket, I think, something like that. And so we went around there, and I didn't lose the first time around. I said, "I like this." And so I went on that putting clock all the time so I could beat these older guys putting, which I did. And I got to be a good putter really early.
I bet they didn't ask you all the time after that then, did they?
Well, I broke a lot of people's hearts. Then on the tour with my putter, I can guarantee you.
That's going to wrap up the front nine, but don't go anywhere. We're going to go to the back nine and the second half of our interview with the great Tom Watson. This is Golf with Jay Delson.
Folks, do you need a new car, truck, or SUV? Then the Dean team of Kirkwood is the place for you to go. 314-966-0303 and go see Colin Byrne. He just got me into a new SUV and I love it. Boy, did they make the experience painless and super, super easy. Most dealers don't have any cars in their lots, but at Dean Team of Kirkwood, Colin has an entire parking lot full of new and used cars. You don't want a VW? That's no problem. They have Audis, BMWs, Mercedes, anything you want. Colin and the Dean Team of Kirkwood will go get it if they don't have it. Call them at 314-966-0303 or go to DeanTeamVWKirkwood.com. The Dean Team. For all your car buying needs. Folks, are you in the market for some additional protection for your ride? You need to call my friends at Vehicle Assurance. Their number is 866-341-9255. Sherry Fain is the owner and president, and she and her team are committed to helping you with your unexpected auto repair bills. They are committed to finding the right protection for you, your budget, and your family. They only work with the top vehicle service providers in the country. Get the protection and the peace of mind you deserve. That's Vehicle Assurance, 866-341-9255. For a free quote, 866-341-9255.
Hey, St. Louis, the Ascension Charity Classic, presented by Emerson, is back this September. Don't miss the excitement when the PGA Tour Champions Best compete again, all for charity, September 9th through the 11th at Norwood Hills Country Club. Pro-Am spots, hospitality packages, VIP tickets, and more. Available now at AscensionCharityClassic.com.
I want to tell you about a family-owned and operated golf business that's been right here in St. Louis for over 40 years. I'm talking about Pro-Am Golf Center. That's right, Pro-Am Golf Center. I know you know the name, but I'm not sure you know what they really have to offer. They have everything a seasoned golfer like myself could need, all the way down to what a beginner would want. Pro-Am Golf Center has the lowest price in the area for custom club fitting. I just went and visited CJ. He is terrific. If you call them now, mention my name, Jay Delson, you will receive a discount on that already low club fitting price. Their number is 314-647-8054. Ask for CJ. Or you can visit them at ProAmGolfUSA.com. That's ProAmGolfUSA.com.
This is Golf with Jay Delsing. To learn more about the game of golf, latest equipment, and golfing tips, log on to JayDelsingGolf.com. The Back Nine is presented by Pro-Am Golf.
Hey, welcome back. This is Jay Delsing. Pearly's with me. We're headed to the back nine. It's brought to you by our friends at Pro-Am Golf. Get it fitted. Get fitted. Get fitted. Call CJ. You can reach out to him at 314-647-8054. You can visit them at ProAmGolfUSA.com. We are going to the second half of Tom Watson. Tom, you had some great duels with Jack Nicklaus in 1977 with the Masters in the Open Championship. I look back at how close you guys are. It's something so special about this game, the gentlemanly nature of it, where you want to beat each other's brains in, but then you guys have remained friends throughout all of these different scenarios.
Well, yeah, I think those two events kind of solidified a respect and a friendship between us. And it just blossomed from then on in 77 when I won the Masters, particularly when I won the Open Championship at Turnberry that summer, the duel in the sun, as they call it, when we played the last 36 holes together. And it was a shootout, basically. Jack got up by three after four holes in the final round at Turnberry. And then I tied him by eight, and then he won it by two, by 12. Then I made a no-brainer at 15 to tie, and you get back to a tie after birdieing 13. And then he missed a shortish putt on the 17th hole, and I took a one-shot lead. And then the last hole, he made that darn 30-footer that forced me to make my short putt for birdie to win by a shot. And when he walked off the green with me, he grabbed me by around the neck, Jay, and he said to me, he said, "Tom, I gave him my best shot, but it wasn't good enough. Congratulations. I'm really proud of it, and I'm happy for you." And when it came from the best player that maybe ever played, arguably ever played the game, you know, it gave me the feeling that, you know what, if I can beat Jack Nicklaus, I can beat them all. It really, you know, my career really took off after that. I really had a really great career for about 4 or 5 years, 6 years after that.
And then you topping it with the win at Pebble Beach and the phenomenal little pitch that you hold on 17, and then you wound up birdieing 18 right on top of it. And who's the first person we see behind the 18th green at Pebble Beach when you've just won the U.S. Open?
It was Jack, but I tell you the conversation, and it goes related back to that long putt, that no-brainer that I at Turnberry in 77 that I made from off the 15th green to tie him. I chipped the ball into 17, birdie 18. He's waiting for me off the green. He's got this really gruff look on his face. He grabs me by the shoulders, and he said, "You little son of a bee, you did it to me again. You did it to me again." And then he smiled and he said, "I'm really, really happy for you. Congratulations. You needed to win the U.S. Open." Thought that was so big of him to wait for me and say that to me, even though I know I broke his heart by chipping the ball in. He was standing there with Jack Whitaker on the 18th hole after he finished. He finished before me, and they saw where I hit the ball at 17 in the left rough with a very, well, let's put it this way, it wasn't impossible, but it was a very difficult chip shot up off a downslope, out of heavy rough to a downslope green. Both Jack Whitaker and Jack looked at that, and Jack Whitaker kind of smiled and said, "Jack, what's it going to feel like to win your fifth U.S. Open championship?" And before Jack could answer, the roar went up when I chipped it in, and Jack kind of goes, turns around toward the 17th hole, and he's, "What's that?"
One of the things that's always impressed me about you is there is what I call a Watson character. You're undeniably scrupulously honest about penalties. You've called a penalty on yourself I don't know how many times. One event, the ball was sitting in, I think it was either the U.S. Open or the British Open. You're in, you know, weeds that are probably up to your waist. You call a penalty on yourself because the ball somehow moved. I also remember what you did for Ian Woosnam in the 91 Masters because he was catching a lot of heckle from the crowd, and you didn't stand for that at all. And it goes on and on. You called out Tiger Woods. You've done a lot of things like that, Tom. I so admire that.
I think that, you know, the game is bigger than any one person. I think that people who play the game, there's a certain etiquette. And, you know, right now this world doesn't seem like it has a lot of etiquette anymore, sadly. The disrespect that people have for each other. The game of golf, though, there's still a fundamental element of respect for the people that with whom you're playing and the game itself. And play by the rules. Take your hat off at the 18th hole and shake the hand of your fellow competitors, whether they beat you or you beat them, and do the right things when you're on the golf course. That's why I think the game is the best game there is, because you play with the respect. You play it honestly. That's what I love most about the game of golf.
Person that was just a little younger than you, I looked up to you guys and had felt like this was the torch that was passed down to us, that maybe we didn't have the careers, but we could still honor those elements of the game.
When I came on the tour, I always gravitated to the players who were the older players who were out there. I became friends with with Ken Venturi, and Bob Murphy's a little bit more my era, but you know, Bob and I became very close friends and got to know, you know, the players out there, the Dan Sykes, the Bert Yancey's, the, of course, you know, Jack and Arnie, not Arnie so much. You know, Arnie, I played with him just a few times, but Arnie and I, you know, over the years, especially when we played the senior Skins games together, got to know Arnie really well then. I respected those guys, and I respected their what they had to say to me. I was in the Colonial, playing the Colonial. I played a second round. I played a good round, and Chichi Rodriguez was in the locker room. This, I played a morning round, and Chichi was in there, and he was effusing over me about saying, "Wow, Watts, you know, Tom, you're playing great golf. You're really a great player," and all this sort of stuff. And Julius Boros was sitting at the next table, and he just kind of under his breath, he said, "Yeah, I like to have the money you pissed away," meaning that I had a lot of times I could win a tournament and I blew it. It didn't hurt me by him saying it because it was the truth. I mean, I wish I had not pissed it away. And finally, I learned how to win under pressure. But you know, I like that about the old guys out there. They're brutally honest. You know, sometimes it's hard to be brutally honest with kids today.
Yeah, it's a different world, isn't it? Tom, how about the honorary starter at the Masters? How was that this year with Gary and Jack?
It was an honor, you know, first and foremost, to be able to stand up there in the tee with Jack and Gary. I mean, they'd done it for many years, and that was, you know, they do it because people wanted to see, you know, the greats of the past. They wanted to see them in their element. Our memories of standing on that first tee when we had the lead of the tournament, or we're trying to win the tournament, you know, they come back to you. You know, we're standing on that tee, and it's a great feeling to be on that tee, but knowing that you're not competing anymore, but are there to say to the golf world that thank you very much for being our fans and coming out and watching us and being in the company of Jack and Gary was just as a tremendous honor.
All right, Pearl. Wow, that interview was just fantastic.
You know, I just love the different types of people you're having on the show, and you always kind of come to me and what was my first takeaway, and I was trying to figure out how to phrase this the right way, and I'm going to just say Tom Watson carries the torch forward for the game of golf. Just his class, the respect he has for the game, the players of the game, the history of the game. I think he carries the torch, and I think he's a good one to do that for the sport of golf, particularly for the PGA Tour.
I totally agree. He's a high character guy. He's very, very principled. He's not afraid to speak up when it might be uncomfortable. I've had a lot of good tournaments, Pearl, in bad weather. And I always thought it was about attitude and about just embracing. Where's the weather worse in the entire country than St. Louis most of the time? It's either oppressively hot, stupid cold, or some sort of combination of the two. You know, and I sit there and look at Jack Nicklaus called Tom the best bad weather player he had ever seen. You know, I asked Tom about that, and then Tom had some really fun takes on a bunch of other things. But every single time I talk to him about growing the game, and he always talks about the grip, John, and getting your hands on the club correctly.
It's interesting. You know, Palmer was big on that whole thing too. Obviously, the grip is important, but was that just more of their time that they talked so much about that? Or what do you think about that?
I think that's what was drilled down onto them when they were younger.
I think that was
one of the things that was told to them that was crucially important. They've carried that forward. And I think that and you look at those guys, and I mean, whose hands held a golf club and looked more comfortable and looked more right, so to speak, than a Mr. Arnold Palmer or Mr. Tom Watson?
Yeah, and they were both quite different. I think Tom Watson's swing relative to the weather, I think the rhythm of his swing was a big deal. He had a fairly quick rhythm, and I think that was helpful to him.
Yeah, it absolutely was. All right, Pearl, that's going to wrap up the back nine, but don't go anywhere, folks. We're going to break this stuff down on the Michelob Ultra 19th hole. We have more Golf with Jay Delsing.
Powers Insurance is a family-owned agency right here in St. Louis that specializes in providing personalized coverage for the client who has a lot going on. At Powers, they understand that you and your life do not fit in a simple box. So guess what? Neither should your insurance coverage. Go to powersinsurance.com or call 314-725-1414 and ask for Tim Davis. That's powersinsurance.com.
Hey, St. Louis, the Ascension Charity Classic, presented by Emerson, is back this September. Don't miss the excitement when the PGA Tour Champions Best compete again, all for charity, September 9th through the 11th at Norwood Hills Country Club. Pro-Am spots, hospitality packages, VIP tickets, and more. Available now at AscensionCharityClassic.com.
Hey, folks, get this date, June 13th at Norwood Hills Country Club on your calendar. What's so important about June 13th? It's the annual SSM Health Foundation Open. You golfers can tee it up at Norwood Hills. Go to SSMHealth.org. I will be at Norwood that day supporting the cause.
This is Golf with Jay Delsing. To learn more about the game of golf, see the latest equipment, get golfing tips from a PGA pro, log on to jdelsinggolf.com. The 19th hole is presented by Michelob Ultra.
Hey, welcome back. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. I got John Perlis with me, and we are headed to the 19th hole. Pearl, go ahead and open one. So, John, I wanted to get back to the Tom Watson thing. How about the fact that Tom Watson, who had won 4 Missouri Amateur Championships, did not get a golf scholarship?
We got in when golf started to matter in college. It had probably mattered for a few years before we got there. But when he's talking about an $8,000, I think he mentioned, full budget, it's just changed absolutely remarkably since then. So I think, and he mentioned it, I think just getting into Stanford, it was his entree into Stanford. He didn't necessarily note that he was a straight A student with high SATs and ACTs. So apparently golf helped get him in there, which is a big deal. But yeah, it's changed. When you look at the budgets that these schools have now, I think in the millions, some of them, no comparison.
Gosh, I really wanted to beat Tom Watson. I really wanted to beat him. So the way that we got paired together on Sunday is that we both shot 71 on Saturday. So I thought, oh, man, because Tom made a nice little 12-footer on Saturday to shoot 71. So I was kind of rooting for him because I thought this will be cool. We'll get to play 2 days in a row. And then on Sunday, I had about an 8-footer on the last hole to clip him, and I missed.
That's awesome. That's just one of those takeaways. But how did you guys play? Did you have a good tournament, or did you both have an off day?
Oh, gosh. I think we both shot even par the second day. I think we probably finished in the middle of the pack. I don't think it was anything. It was definitely not memorable for him. And, I mean, the fact that I made a cut on the PGA Tour was pretty cool. But I don't think any of that was overly memorable. But I just, you know, John, to sit there and play 18 holes with a guy like that, you know, 2 days in a row, is really something. It goes in my mind, in the books of the 3 days in a row I got to play with Arnold Palmer, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm waking up and I'm showering, getting ready to go out to the golf course because I get to play with Arnold Palmer again today and tomorrow. I mean, that's badass stuff.
Yeah, all-time names. That's a lot of fun. That's awesome.
Well, John, that is going to wrap up another show. We got another show in the books, and our golf ball giveaway this week is Jack Collins. Jack, you got a dozen TP5 coming your way. Look for them soon. Pearl, thanks for being with me, and we will be at it again next week. Hit them straight, St. Louis.
Hey, do you like wine? Have you heard about the hottest new wine bar in St. Louis? It's called Wild Crush Wine Bar, and it's located in Town and Country on Clayton Road, just behind the Straub's. Have you ever experienced self-dispensing wine machines? Well, they are here. The only place in St. Louis and most of Missouri that you'll find them, and it's at Wild Crush. You can choose your size of pour, and Wild Crush will pour the freshest wine in the area for you. The organic argon gas system used at Wild Crush keeps this wine pristinely fresh for up to 60 days. So if you're tired of drinking wine that's been open for a few days, come into Wild Crush for the best and freshest wine selection in the area. Go to wildcrushstl.com and come have one with us.
This has been Golf with Jay Delsing. To learn more about Jay and the services he can provide any golfer, visit jdelsinggolf.com. You'll see the latest in golf equipment, get tips from a PGA pro, and you'll learn more about the game of golf. That's jdelsinggolf.com.